Greetings, everyone. Since I last saw you, 6 out of 10 Americans voted against the president-elect, and he won it anyway. And Time magazine comes up with the word mandate on the cover and says that this gentleman, who is a governor of a state smaller than the payroll he now inherits of the number of people on the federal payroll in Washington and around the country, there are fewer people in Arkansas than there are on the federal government payroll, has proceeded to march the United States about 27 steps straight backward into a cesspool called Sodom and Gomorrah. He has immediately decided to allow queers, gays, and lesbians in our military. I can just see it now in the next war, wherever it might be. Charge! Except I think all of those who shoulder a rifle probably will want to look at the other one and say, I don't want to shoot him, I want to kiss him, he's cute. I'm just kidding, but it does make me a little bit sick to think of gays and lesbians in the military. Having been in the military myself and having had the experience of the horrible embarrassment and chagrin we experienced in our own barracks in Miramar, my first couple of years in the Navy before I went to sea, there was a young man there who was a second-generation member of the Naval Service. His father was a captain or a commander. He was a high-ranking man in the Navy. And this young man was going to make the Navy his career. But unfortunately, I won't get into the gross details, he came staggering back to the barracks one night absolutely stone drunk, and the MPs coming through to check the barracks caught a homosexual, a closet queen we didn't know we had, in the security unit with this fellow, and both of them were given undesirable medical discharges. So that was the end of a young man's career through really no fault of his own, who wanted to put in 20 or 30 years in the Navy. As I look at all the things that are happening, even before this man who does not have a mandate takes office, saying we're going to allow all the Haitians in now with their AIDS, their drugs, their crime, their disease, all the ones that we were actually trying to keep out because of all those problems that they would bring to our country, a country that is the biggest debtor in the history of the world, whose grandchildren have been sold into poverty because we will be forever trying to pay off even the interest on the debt, whose labor force now works 1 month out of 12 to pay just the interest we owe on the Japanese by themselves. A nation that seems now to be taking several steps backward into a cesspool described in the Word of God as Sodom and Gomorrah. It is incredible the changes that have been announced. I see the latest cynical little bit of political hypocrisy is that this gentleman has decided he is going to choose as his cabinet members through cynical political expediency, not based upon merit, but based upon demographics, based upon representation of minorities, based upon the fact that he's already running for his second term. So, of course, he is going to have blacks, Chicanos, Orientals, women, or a combination thereof, and won't that mean at least one gay and one lesbian on his cabinet? I guess it doesn't mean that, but on the other hand, it could it not? There will be a time, no doubt, when America will eventually be electing a lady to the presidency. We almost had a woman vice president. Well, not almost, they were defeated rather soundly 8 years ago, but that is not beyond the realm of possibility. I'm going to turn to the book of Matthew, the 24th chapter, and read a few scriptures and remind us of where we are and whether or not we are in fact living anywhere near the last days. He says in verse 35 of Matthew 24, Heaven and earth shall pass away, but my word shall not pass away, but of that day and hour knows no man, no, not the angels of heaven, but my Father only. But as the days of Noah were, so shall also the coming of the Son of Man be. Archaeology proves that the days of Noah were violent, crime-ridden days. The earth, it says in the Bible, was absolutely filled with violence, and all flesh had corrupted his way upon the earth. The skeletal remains unearthed from pre-Noachian flood detritus and some of the strata in ancient caves shows that there were skulls of individuals with chisel marks, or the marks that were made by people who had actually slain other human beings, beheaded them, roasted their heads in the fire, and then bashed in the skull to get at the steaming brains inside, as gross as that may sound. Now, don't sit there and be shocked, because one of the two favorite movies that was even, I think, nominated, maybe won some Academy Awards, had to do with serial killers, one of which not only dismembered, but even cannibalized his victims, and Americans will go to the box office and pay very good money because of the article that I wrote talking about their insatiable bloodlust, of the incredible appetite, like so many Yorkshire hogs at the slop trough, of the average American wanting to go to the movies to see some of the most grotesque, demoniacal, bloody scenes that you can even begin to imagine. I don't know just how far we can sink, but I have a hunch that we're getting just about as far as we can go. So as I see that the world at that time was so filled with death and mayhem and cannibalism and sodomy and murder and destruction, and I see where we are today. As I was going up toward Colorado a couple of weeks ago and listening on my car radio, I heard one man come on and talk about how it was way too expensive for the government to put serial killers and murderers to death. His argument was that it costs way too much money. I don't know if he's talking about the electrical bill. I don't know if he was talking about the cost of the pills they drop in the bucket underneath the seat. I don't know if he's talking about constructing a death chamber and what you pay for the chair and the leather straps. I don't know if he's talking about paying the barber to carve a hole in the top, you know, to take the hair off the top of his head. The way I look at it, I had a 270 bullet in my truck that only cost me 11 cents. I think it's pretty cheap myself, but he said that one of the reasons that he was absolutely profoundly against capital punishment was it was too expensive. Now, what does your mind say about an argument like that? Too expensive? How about 47 years in a prison funny farm with access to the prison library so he can get a law degree to sue the people who put him there, television, heated, lighted, and air-conditioned, his own private commode, and, of course, an exercise room. He can learn to be anything from a deep-sea diver to an arc welder to a lawyer to a doctor while he's in jail making your license plates. Which is the most expensive, keeping him alive for 47 years after he's killed 16 kids, 3 women, and 4 guys that maybe tried to come to their aid? There was a fellow in California several years ago. He's alive and well in the prison funny farm if he's not back out in the streets, who actually bulldozed a section of the California farmland, drove a whole school bus filled with terrified little children in there, took the bulldozer, covered up the school bus with just a pipe allowing a little bit of air in there, and then proceeded to try to get ransom to the tune of who knows how many tens of millions of dollars while those poor people were buried underground. Now, as I read what the Bible says about criminal justice, about crime, about our country, and where we are today, and I look at the changes taking place, it is really frightening. Now, God allowed the election to come out the way it did. But as I look at the news media for the last several weeks, all I'm seeing is what Governor Clinton, President-elect Clinton, is going to do in his transition team, all the changes he's going to make, and then what's the latest movie, what's the latest entertainment, where are George and Barbara Bush on their latest vacation, the economy, etc. How many of you have heard, watching your news, Good Morning America, NBC Today's program, whatever it might be, that the Pope is planning a trip to Palestine, that a trade war, you might have got a little bit of the bits and pieces of that, is virtually already underway between the United States and the European Economic Community and is going to spread to Japan, that the General Agreement on Tariffs and Trades or the GATT talks is probably a dinosaur, an archaic thing of the past, and yet that's the only thing that has kept the world trade in some sort of an equilibrium for the last 20, 30 years, is what they came to in agreements that have taken place in several cities all over the world. And that appears now to be junked because we are going to slap the wrist of other people who are subsidizing some of their favorite industries, and we don't know what we're talking about. Americans do not understand the Germans. They do not understand the Japanese. Americans do not understand that at least in 4 of the former Soviet Socialist Republics, there are enough nuclear weapons to nuke us out of existence and are not all under the same government. You don't hear an awful lot about the terrible troubles Yeltsin is facing, about the potential for civil war in Russia, about the moves to clamp down again on Estonia, Latvia, and Lithuania, about civil war, about to dismember Czechoslovakia, about what's happening in Yugoslavia, we are seemingly relegating all of these things, including trade war. The Pope is going to go to Palestine, demonstrations and riots in Germany, both pro and con, against the skinheads and the neo-Nazis, who, by the way, depending upon which survey and what part of the country, whether formerly West Germany or predominantly Nazi, neo-Nazi, and skinhead favorite over in East Germany, one newspaper, I believe this was in the southern part of the Rhineland, it might have been, I forget which city, but it was a leading German newspaper, determined that 54% of the people they polled were in favor with what the skinheads were doing and was screaming and demonstrating against Vietnamese, Turks, Portuguese, other people who were coming in taking jobs that they felt belonged to Germans. And in some cases, there have been those who have been murdered. I've mentioned before the Vietnamese who was beaten to death on a public bus and his body simply thrown in the street. Now there have been some counter-demonstrations. Because there are, after all, about two-thirds of the German people as a majority, especially in formerly West Germany, who agree with the government and who are very much aware of the terrible notoriety gained by these skinhead abuses around the world and the desecration of Jewish cemeteries and the beginning, once again, of the persecution not only of minorities but of Jews inside of Germany, and they don't want any more of Hitlerism or of Nazism. That's about two-thirds of the population, at least in the West. But I remind you that Hitler came to power with but a tiny minority. It wasn't until they gained 12% that the Nazi Party was even noticed at all. They were still way below the communists in their numbers. It was only a tiny, rabble-rousing minority of street thugs who eventually came to power in Germany. Now, all I'm asking, I guess, essentially is, to the Church of God International, as well as the general public of the United States, are we sound asleep? Are we somnolently going along, as it says here, as in the days of Noah before the flood, they were eating and drinking? Now today we've been eating and drinking, and we'll eat and drink again after the services. That's not that we're eating to excess or drinking to excess, it's just that we're living. We have breakfast and then lunch and then dinner, that's all. There's nothing evil about that. They were just eating and drinking. It doesn't imply eating and drinking to excess. Marrying and giving in marriage, nothing wrong with that. But what is marriage? It's a plan for the future. And giving in marriage. And by the way, I think that what we ought to have when divorce comes along is an unmarriage. And I'm going to propose that from now on, when divorce occurs, they ought to come before the judge, they ought to set a date, and everybody who was at the wedding ought to be almost commanded to come back. And then they ought to stand at the aisle, and the minister ought to unmarry them. They ought to turn around, give their rings back. Daddy comes up, grabs the bride with a look of pure hatred of the man, marches her straight out of the church to everybody's applause. If they're going to go through all that ceremony to put the bond together, why not have an un-ceremony and an un-wedding and make it official? Let everybody enjoy it. Anyhow, marrying and giving in marriage until the day that Noah entered into the ark and knew not. That is a surprising biblical phrase. Here's Noah building this giant structure out in the middle of a cornfield, miles from any river, lake, or ocean, which is made to save the human race and to float on waters. And for 120 years, he's standing on an ever higher portion of that huge vessel, preaching to these people, I'm telling you, when I finish this ship, it's going to rain. But you know, you can get tired of sermons after 10 or 12 years, let alone 120 years. And nobody really believed old Nutty Noah, as they probably called him. And they knew not until the flood came and took them all away. But you see, when the flood came, then they knew. Then they knew. Why is it so dark out there? Man, look at that rain. That's a regular gully washer, regular toad strangler. Like somebody pouring water out of a boot. I never saw it get so dark out there. And it rained. And 30 days later, it was raining. And 40 days later, it was still raining all night and all day. Then, all that time, as the water came up to the windowsills, and then to the roof, and then to the tops of the trees, and they're clinging there, and the water's still up, and there floats the ark away, they knew. In their hundreds of thousands, they knew. And really, all along, they could have known, or they should have known, and many of them probably did know, because you know who floated away? People who earned their livelihoods. People who helped gather animals, people who helped fed them, people who cared for them in the pens, people with adzes and draw knives and axes, people who were hewing that huge amount of timber and dragging it on gigantic ox carts with huge wooden wheels, tens and twenties and maybe 50, 60, 80 miles, building this thing laboriously like a group of contractors and laborers. There were probably hundreds of people that earned their livelihood through at least three generations working on that giant ship. They had no reason not to know. I remember a sermon many, many years ago I preached entitled, In the Shadow of the Ark, where I was drawing the analogy back in the heyday of Ambassador College and worldwide of the many, many people. We had an $11 million payroll. And that's an awful lot of money, an awful lot of people. We were spending over $92,000 for our light and electrical bill on the Ambassador College campus per year alone. So we're talking about an awful lot of money. And here were people in all these various departments, and we were involved in this work of witnessing and warning the world about what was happening. And yet our biggest problems were almost always internal, interpersonal, problems of the emotion, problems involving personnel. I'll give you a little vignette, a little example right quickly as I come to another scripture. I want to mention it. I'll go back a few verses to verse 8, 9, and 10. He talks about wars and rumors of wars, kingdom against kingdom, famines, pestilences, earthquakes, droughts, famines. All these are the beginning, verse 8, of tribulation, the great tribulation, sorrows, trials, troubles. Then shall they deliver you up to be afflicted and shall kill you. Not if you look like one of them, they won't. Not if you publish articles for your youth magazine in nice red and green about Christmas time about Jesus being a king, they won't. Not if you try to edge closer to the Protestant mainstream to where you're absolutely undiscernible from any of the rest of them. If you take up with the Trinity and you say you're already born again, they won't. But they will certainly hate and try to murder those who are telling them to their faces what the problems really are, and shall kill you, and you shall be hated of all nations for my name's sake. And then, at the very time when it is most illogical, at the very time when you would think all of God's people would have put aside all their differences and be clinging to one another with tears in their eyes, supporting one another, forgiving one another, helping one another, having empathy for one another, then shall many be offended and shall betray one another and shall hate one another. I got a letter this last week I want to tell you about real briefly. To set it up, first let me tell you that even though I've never made an announcement publicly about it and don't intend to now in any great detail, shortly after, right at the end of the ministerial conference, we had one of our pastors who had decided he wanted to be independent and told me face to face that he could no longer support the church guidelines as set down by the church council, the ministerial council, nor would he be subject to the ministerial council. And there were several members of the council with whom he had deep personal problems and disagreements. Well, we went round and round with that, and I had to write a lot of letters and calm a lot of people down. Mr. Dart had to write a letter over there to the membership down in Atlanta and up in Knoxville. He's had to make two trips over there, and we do have some churches in Atlanta and Knoxville, but there were some things that happened over there that caused some upset feelings, as you might imagine. Having written the letter over there and having had to fight for about 2 weeks to tell all of the people who argued with me that I allegedly yanked this man's credentials or demanded them, that was used over and over again, which is a point-blank lie and an untruth, he handed them to me. I didn't ask for them. I didn't want them. And I held out my hand and left it there for about 3 minutes and then put his little credentials, really only a copy of his credentials, on a little TV set in an alcove between us where it stayed for the remainder of about an hour and a half meeting, hoping he would reach out and pick it up at any moment. He didn't want to do it, and he didn't. So he voluntarily did this and decided to become an independent minister, not affiliated with the Church of God International. Well, we handed that with kid gloves just as nicely as we knew how, make it just as easy for him as we could. There were no recriminations. There was nothing that happened. Well, you all know at the beginning of the feast the announcement I had to make about that fiery crash. And you heard what we had to say about three members of the Throgmorton family and how Cindy Throgmorton's sister, her 17-year-old daughter, and her 5-year-old son lost their lives. I got a letter this week from a lady over in Knoxville who said, and I quote, "That fiery crash that happened to those people is nothing compared to what you did to the Knoxville church." Great peace have they that love thy law, and nothing shall offend them. I did something. What? To the Knoxville church. I haven't the faintest idea. But you see, all of a sudden, your mind is trying to use logic. Your mind is trying to deal rationally with something that is utterly irrational. Because once emotion has entered in, there is no more rationality, there is no more logicality, there is no more point-by-point understanding of what's going on here. There is only bitterness and rancor. Now, I almost hate to answer that letter, but I'm going to sleep on it a few more days and then try to help the dear woman out of her problem and try to help her to understand the mistakes that she is making, if I'm able. But it's certainly an example that the mentality of a mob, the mentality of the mob that killed Jesus Christ, the mentality of any mob that is played upon by some individual who is able to manipulate the feelings of individuals and to play upon their prejudices and to give them little half-truths to find a scapegoat for the difficulties. And probably the dear woman has been subjected to some of that. Some party or parties from somewhere have told her some things that are absolutely untrue. So she's only dealing with maybe 1% of the facts, if that, and the rest of it is all assumption. And then she comes up with this horribly hurtful, painful expression. Can you imagine saying that to the Throgmortons? Can you imagine it? To me, it's an example, because this is a lady that is a member of this church, attending one of our local congregations, who wrote that letter to me. So it is indicative to me, as I put it all together with what is happening here and ask the question, are we living anywhere near the last days? The Apostle Paul thought he was. My dad thought he was. Those before him thought they were. Ministers in the American Revolutionary War thought they were living in the last days. And those in World War II thought they were living in the last days. Martin Luther thought and wrote, time cannot go on much further, as he looked at the evils around him, especially relating to the Roman Catholic Church, at all sorts of excesses and expropriation of private property and of putting people out, excommunication and shunning, as well as far greater evils than that, as in the Spanish Inquisition, of which he had to know. During the 30 Years' War, the American Revolutionary War, the Civil War, the First and Second World Wars. Now I ask you this, are we, of the Church of God International, opportunists merely taking advantage of world crises as they come along and running around like Chicken Little saying, flee from the wrath to come, the sky is falling, everything is going to pot, the country's going down the drain, terrible things are about to happen, we're living in the time of the end when there's no real reason for it? If you go back and look at the world since the development of the atomic bomb, and that's in the lifetime of an awful lot of us in this room and along the tape program, at how blindingly, rapidly, the world has progressed from the days of the Wright brothers, that was during my father's lifetime, to the space race with footprints of mankind on the moon. From the days when scientists used to think watermelon seeds turned into bugs, that old rotten meat bred mice, or that maggots appeared magically if you simply covered up a jar of meat with a gauze. They didn't see the fly that snuck in there and laid its eggs. And that only a few years ago, doctors were patting little housewives on their nice pointed little heads and saying, don't worry about a thing. I know you're uptight and upset, but thalidomide is a wonder drug. And because they were in authority, millions of American women took them. And so today there are people running around without arms and legs and hands and all distorted. And many of them died. And there are people living wretched lives as a result of the authorities in medical science who knew what they were talking about. It's amazing, isn't it? How rapidly things have happened, how quickly they have developed from the time of that crude device that they weren't even sure was going to work, that was so absolutely heavy that when the Enola Gay thundered down the runway on Iwo Jima to take off to transport it to Hiroshima, they weren't even sure that aircraft was going to get airborne because it was thousands of pounds overweight. It exploded, and so did the other one, and that was the extent of our nuclear arsenal. We were out of bombs. We had no others. We had the one device that was exploded from a tower over at Los Alamos and was seen in downtown Las Vegas, many, many miles away, and we had those other two called Fat Man and Little Boy, and that's all we had. Little did we know at the time, the Soviet Union knew about Project Manhattan, and very quickly, with their infiltration of the American nuclear physics efforts and their infiltration of the American military and infiltration perhaps of the FBI and the CIA itself, they were on their way toward a nuclear bomb, the hydrogen bomb, by 1950. Those who say, well, they've always said we were living in the last days, that they were wrong, and we are wrong today, simply don't know what they're talking about. They're trying to do away with all the advancements of science, to do away with things like laser-guided bombs and whatever the meaning of the depletion of the ozone layer over the Arctic and Antarctic areas means. Scientists are really arguing back and forth about that. Some say that's always been there. Some say we've always had volcanoes, that Mount Pinatubo has been a contributory factor, more so than ladies' hairspray. Whether or not they know what they're talking about, we will probably find out as we watch whether or not there's an acceleration of the melting of the polar ice caps, whether or not we see a continuing deterioration of global weather patterns, whether or not we see growing, record-breaking weather throughout the United States and around the world, colder winters than ever before, wetter summers than ever before, shorter growing season than ever before, resultant drought and famine that takes millions of lives. If and when that begins to pile up upon us, we will perhaps agree with some of those that we now say are a little bit more like Chicken Little than they should be, who are warning about the vastness of the size of that ozone depletion, which is now supposed to be larger than the continental United States of America. The satellites parked above it can take pictures and can actually, through their sensors and the various devices that can detect the presence of ozone, have determined that over the polar ice cap, the hole in the ozone layer is bigger than the continental United States. Is that significant? Here is Jesus Christ of Nazareth during his day, giving us a global overview of world populations, of famine, of drought, of nature in convulsions, of earthquakes, droughts, and famines, and typhoons, and hurricanes, and says all this is the very beginning. He's also brought in the political picture, the geopolitical picture, of wars and rumors of wars, and then the most illogical thing you would think of, that people in God's church will begin to become offended and will hate one another. That doesn't make sense, does it? You would think it would be the other way around. You would think that as we see the day approaching, we would grow closer together. Now, why? How can that happen? Let's think about what Jesus said involving Mrs. Lot. He said, remember Lot's wife. In that very brief statement, the shortest verse in all of the Bible, second shortest, beg your pardon, Jesus wept is the shortest. Remember Lot's wife. Jesus portrayed a civilization, a society, which was so degenerate and so rotten, and the people, even though they were called good and decent people, righteous Lot, whose just soul was vexed day to day, as it says in the New Testament, with all of the deeds of the people around him, yet nevertheless he was part of his society, and it was wearing calluses on his conscience. And it was his town, Sodom, and the neighboring city of Gomorrah. It was familiar to them. Their babies had been born there. They had grown up there. We're not told, you know, exactly what his status was from the standpoint of how much money he had, what kind of a home he lived in, what he did for a living. But we know that he had a family, that it was a fairly substantial family. And he was certainly well known by all of the other gays in the community because they were there trying to beat down the door just because a couple of strangers came to visit. Maybe it wasn't as big a city as we think. Maybe it was only 4,000 or 5,000. I have the impression that perhaps it was not much more than 5,000 to 10,000. It certainly wasn't any 40,000 or 50,000 population, or the whole populace couldn't have been there banging at the door. And I don't think it involved necessarily the 100% of the population anyway, as far as that's concerned. But when they were extricated, almost as with a spiritual crowbar, when God had to literally reach in and virtually drag them out of that environment, Mrs. Lot couldn't stand it and had to, contrary to what God commanded, look back with yearning at her roots, at her homeland, at her home, at where everything that she owned and everything that was familiar and comfortable had been. It says to me, as I look at us living in this world with our monetary system, with these strange words that must sound really crazy to God, not one word that can come out of my mouth is pure, not one word that I can utter to you which conveys understanding to your mind is anything except pagan. The very word God itself comes from Guth, Gaut, and Guth meant Taurus, the bull. I understand that. I know that. But when I say God, you don't immediately think, oh, that means pour out as in libation to an idol, do you? No, you think of the Father of Jesus Christ. So I'm merely using a phonetic sound that has had transitional and translational aberrations or evolution down through centuries of time to where it conveys a completely different meaning than it might have to the ancient Teutons, because the old Anglo-Saxon language, which is Teutonic in origin, and is a language which is wholly impossible for an Englishman to even learn today, had the word that meant Taurus the bull, from which the English word God derives. It is easier, by the way, for a modern Englishman to learn French than it is for a modern Englishman to learn Old Anglo-Saxon, which is the father of the English language. There's just absolutely no obvious relation between them at all. It's undergone so many changes. So as I'm saying, but I'm standing here speaking to you in a language which is wholly foreign to the ears of God, except God can understand all the tongues of man. He, after all, is the one who divided them up after the Tower of Babel and confused mankind, because he said, with one language and with the pooling of knowledge, this they begin to do, and now nothing that they have imagined will be held from them unless he stopped it. Now, what that says to me is, if I look at the rapidity with which the pooling of knowledge and building upon previous knowledge and experimentation, and as they say, R&D, research and development, has brought us to the brink of nuclear extermination in an age involving a space race, Star Wars, and all of these incredible military weapons that we see about us today, is merely telling us that probably mankind would have done that in far less than 1,000 years this side of the Tower of Babel. It may have only taken them 400, 500, 600 years to have had nuclear weapons and brought about the disintegration, destruction of all of mankind at that time. Because the barrier, which is the biggest barrier to human understanding, one of the greatest contributory factors to racism, to fear, to a feeling of tribalism and group instincts, to different religions, is the barrier of language. When you can't understand what somebody is telling you, you can't understand what they're trying to say, therefore you can't understand what they are thinking, and you can't get a glimpse inside their mind and their heart. The barrier that divided man is primarily language. And languages tended to repel each other and separate along confluences of rivers and drainage patterns and isthmuses and islands and mountain ranges and various continental land masses and so on. So God was not going to allow that to happen. Now, here we are in a world where nuclear exchanges still happens to be quite possible. If I can lay it out for you this way, to me it's almost as if once the Berlin Wall came down, Eastern Europe came out from behind the Iron Curtain, the Soviet Union disintegrated, Gorbachev virtually disappeared, Yeltsin took over in Russia, the entire American population, including its leadership, heaved a huge sigh of relief and said, the Cold War is over. Now we can relax. There are no more tigers in the jungle. There are no more potential enemies out there. There is no more a threat of nuclear exchange. There is no more a threat of war from anywhere that we can look around. We're not worried about Sarajevo. We're not worried about Yugoslavia because there's no oil under Yugoslavia. We don't care about those people. Let the Serbs exterminate the Muslims down there. We don't really care. We don't know what language they use when they get together in the Pentagon or the White House Situation Room and talk about those situations, but we're certainly not going to dirty our hands in some little minor wars in some part of the Balkan states in Eastern or Central Europe. Nor are we going to, as we didn't during the days of Neville Chamberlain and FDR, take a hand in the impending disintegration of Czechoslovakia or the other civil wars that may erupt all over the former Soviet Union with the enormous consequences that may come along. Now, I personally want to remain as a watchman looking at what is happening, trying to derive and to understand what it means, conveying it to God's people, conveying a witness and a warning when I go out to preach to people in other parts of the country and around the world. And 1 week from now, God willing, I'm to be in British Columbia and to speak to the people up there in a personal appearance campaign, and I do intend preaching on prophecy, on the significance of the Pope's upcoming visit, the significance of the beginning of relations by establishing a diplomatic community and actually sending an ambassador from Israel to the Vatican, a history precedent-setting, history-making event. And when I see that Jesus himself said, when you see the abomination of desolation stand in the holy place, and when I know that the very man who epitomizes the great fallen Babylonish religion of the Babylonish mystery system, Semiramis and Nimrod, is going to be trodding the streets of the city where Jesus was crucified, where he lay dead and buried for 3 days and three nights, from whence he was resurrected, to me it is significant. Are there people who are going to present the Pope with a fait accompli, who are going to suggest to him, maybe he isn't plotting it and doesn't even know about it, but are going to suggest to him at the next round of war, which erupts in the Middle East, and it will, that the best bet would be for him to march in there at the head of a multilateral European force, that the one nation which could gain more benefit globally in world public opinion than any other would be the German nation, whose change in their constitution is already taking place. They've been debating it. They've been arguing it. They were very chagrined, and Americans are playing directly into their hands when they argue that the Germans should have contributed far more than they did to the war in the Gulf, instead of a couple of minesweepers being sent to the eastern end of the Mediterranean and a little bit of monetary help. And as I said at the time, with tongue in cheek, wouldn't we have enjoyed it sitting there at home watching CNN as a German general saying, first we will cut it off and then we shall kill it, with his high-peaked cap? Wouldn't we have enjoyed it if we'd have seen Japanese Zeros, their modern, you know, supersonic F-15 types, with their laser-guided smart bombs exterminating the forces of Saddam Hussein? Go get them, Japanese! Also, arigato! Wouldn't that have been wonderful? That's what Sasser wants. It's what some of our government wants. It's what the leadership in Washington want. They want these other nations, these powerful, wealthy nations of Germany and Japan, to come in and to share the load. So once again, the heat is on. Pull those people out. Mama wants them home. Mama wanted them home in 1945. Joe Stalin wanted to occupy Germany all the way to the Atlantic Wall. It was a very narrow call that he didn't do so. And as it was, he gobbled up half of Eastern Europe, half of Germany, and of course half of the city of Berlin for over 45 solid years. And we brought them all home, and in less than 1 year, we had an army having dwindled down from about 12 to 14 million men in all of our branches of service to less than 1 million men, and have put all those people back into the labor force in those terrible years of 1946 and 47 and 48, and were again a very small military power. We parked huge big steak trucks, great big trucks. You and I could have started a trucking company with them. Hundreds and hundreds of Jeeps. Remember the story they used to tell you about how right after the war we can buy a Jeep for $100? Well, we couldn't, because none of them came home. To this day, you can go to Manila, the Philippines, you know what you ride in? A jeepney. They're still going. Thousands of them, with little tops on them, painted all up, and the old body is there, and the old engine, much, you know, rebuilt several times. And there are thousands of U.S. Jeeps that were simply given to the Filipino government. You know what they did in Germany? parked them in huge truck parks and sloshed gasoline all over them, simply threw a match and walked away. It was cheaper to destroy hundreds of thousands of trucks and buses and jeeps and wreckers and bulldozers and all that equipment than it was to put it on ships and bring it back to the United States. So we just destroyed it. Our government makes wonderful decisions. I think that I admire so many people in our country who believe with all their heart that if we can just get the right man, and now 4 out of 10 Americans think they've got him, 6 out of 10 don't, and that's only the registered voters, by the way. That represents about 55 million people, and the most of them that wanted it really want Hillary in there because she's going to revise the White House, and they want to see what she's going to do about the Rose Garden. I believe that right down to the depth of my soul. I think that the majority of the people who went and punched those little dots are women anyway. I think that can be determined, can it not? The majority of people who voted were women. And I think women put Jackie in the White House, just like I think they put Hillary in there. But that's neither here nor there, except what it says in Isaiah 3. As for my people, children are their oppressors. Bill Clinton was 2 years of age when I went in the Navy, and that makes me kind of have a little pang. And children rule over them. Women rule over them. Children are their oppressors, and women rule over them, is what it says. Well, getting back to this prophecy for a moment. Jesus Christ of Nazareth says at the very time when you would think God's church would be most alert, most busily doing God's work, clinging together, loving one another, helping one another, then shall many be offended and shall betray one another and shall hate one another. Why is that? Satan, Satan's world, Satan's influence, physical appetites, this world, the cry, indulge yourself, enjoy it while you can, eat, drink, and be merry, for tomorrow we die, let's get it while the getting is good, the hurricane lovemaking syndrome, like the bodies they found when the hurricane came sweeping ashore many, many years ago, and there were people who were actually determined to have died in the act of making love. They decided not to flee. They decided to have one last fling, so they got drunk. You've heard of people who batten down the hatches, you know, and put the plywood over the windows and go inside, and the neighbors all come in, and they open up the booze, and they have a hurricane party. Let the wind blow. We'll just satiate our lusts and our desires in here and have a hurricane party. That's what the world is doing right now. It's having a hurricane party. It's ignoring the wind blowing outside. It's ignoring all the signs. It is going to sleep at the very time when we ought to be most alert. I, for one, intend not to go to sleep, but to continue to read those news magazines, to continue to ferret out the news from foreign publications like the British Economist and German newspapers and other sources, instead of the self-righteous Pharisees that call all the shots, tell you what to think, and then go out and take a poll and tell you how amazed they are that you think that, called the American media. The American media feeds you what you're supposed to think, and then they call up and find out what you think, and then they report to you what you think, and they just are so self-righteous they can't believe that you think that. That's the way it works. Where else do you get your information? It's unbelievable. God's church is entering a time, I believe, a crossroads, as it were, where as an institution, and I speak now not just of the Church of God International, but I speak of tens of thousands of people living all over the world in Australia, South Africa, New Zealand, England, France, Spain, Germany, what have you. I speak of members of the Worldwide Church of God, members of the Church of God Seventh Day, members of many other smaller organizations that have split off from some of them. I was amazed to get a letter from a gentleman recently accusing me of being just like my father and taking issue with me because he'd asked Mr. Ronald Dart to appear in his pulpit. And he lives way up somewhere, I think, in Minnesota. And because Mr. Dart said, I'm sorry, I would like to, but I just can't take the time. There are many pulpits out here in the CGI that would like me to visit. I can't even begin to keep up with them. The man got angry and doesn't want any of our literature anymore. And he is a minister who graduated from Ambassador College, was a member of the Worldwide Church, and for the last 9 years has been occupying a pulpit in the Church of God Seventh Day. And he is offended. Why is that? Why is that? Case after case I've seen recently, people reacting with emotion. It led me to say at lunch the other day with Mr. Dart, Charles Gross, Bronson James, whatever some of us present, when am I going to be able to see some problem occur, interpersonal problem, somebody hurt somebody else's feelings, even where a minister of ours might be involved, and somebody is obnoxious and is causing a problem, asking questions, talking too much, whatever, and they deal with the following scriptures. Why do you not suffer yourselves to be defrauded? Why do you not rather take the wrong? Why not go back to the simplest, most fundamental Christian principle you can ever find in the Word of God? Turn the other cheek. When, brethren, will we do it? I know we say it. I know we say we believe it. When will we live it? If we can't live it at the time, just before everything comes apart all around us in society, if we cannot overlook one another's shortcomings, if we cannot love each other because of our differences, if we cannot cling together as a loving family, as I thought we had come together at the Feast of Tabernacles, and I still think at that time we did, in the light of the terrible fiery crash that struck the lives of the Throgmortons and those other people who were involved. As I see these scriptures, it says to me that we need to be on our guard, because the Bible warns continually that we should not sleep as do others who don't understand. The Bible portrays a hurricane party, as it were, right at the last moment before the great grand smash finale of the age and before the great tribulation, the heavenly signs, and the day of the Lord. Over and over again, Paul warned. He said at the very time when these terrible things were happening, many people were going to sleep. And they shouldn't be lethargic and go to sleep. I do not believe in the idea of church eras. And yet we would be silly if we didn't understand that positioning Laodicea, where he does, right at the very end, that it does portray the potential to fall in line with many other scriptures in the Bible, that about half of God's church, because that is the inference of the virgins in Matthew 25, would be asleep at the switch at the very time they should be most alert, most watchful, most clinging together and worshiping Jesus Christ and hanging onto his feet and letting him rule in their lives. Am I beginning to see in these little things around the edges, nasty letters, people acting in such flagrant violation of Christian principles to each other, at the same time that the world seems to be going to proverbial hell in a handbasket, as they say, pardon the language, but that's not a dirty word, it comes from an old Nordic word, Behalian, or hell, as you know, and meant a hole in the ground. It's merely a slang term. At the very time when the world around us is entering such a horrible, decadent stage, we would think God's church would be stronger. Instead, we begin to see the ugly, personal animosity, anger, ill-tempered, lack of forgiveness, hatred even. It's hard for me to wrap my mind around a lady, bless her heart, she doesn't know any better, who could actually make a statement like that in a letter to me and to think, why doesn't she write it to the Throgmortons and tell the Throgmortons that what happened to their 17-year-old daughter and their beautiful sister and sister-in-law and aunt and that precious 5-year-old boy is not as near as bad as what I, Garner Ted, did to a congregation up there that I had nothing to do with. What kind of a spirit and an attitude is that anyway? I want to turn to the book of Isaiah, to the first chapter, and then over to the book of Jeremiah briefly, refresh our memory a little bit. God's prophet Isaiah, remember, addressed all the nations, not just Israel. Hear, O heavens, verse 2, and give ear, O earth, for the Eternal has spoken. I have nourished and brought up children, and they have rebelled against me. The ox knows his owner, and the ass his master's crib, but Israel does not know. They do not consider. Ah, sinful nation, a people burdened down, or laden, loaded with iniquity, a seed of evildoers, children that are corruptors, they have forsaken the Eternal. They have provoked the Holy One of Israel unto anger. They are gone away backward. Why should you be stricken anymore? Like a rebellious child that has been whipped and beaten and then just continues to revolt. You will revolt more and more. The whole head, that's government, and I certainly concur with that, is sick, and the whole heart faint. From the sole of the foot to the head, there is no soundness in it. I've given the analogy before of old Uncle Sam lying there on the operating table, and that's the way we look to God. But wounds and bruises and putrefying sores, they have not been closed, neither bound up, neither mollified with ointment. In one place, God likens it unto a wall. He says, the sins of the nation are like a wall that has a huge hole in it or a breach. And the pastors, he said, have lightly kind of smeared a little bit of whitewash on it, painted it up, made it look pretty, but they have not healed the wall. They've not closed the breach. That is, they have not shown what is sin and preached a message that convicts people to repent of it. As Jesus called the Pharisees, whitened sepulchers. The exterior looks fine, but inwardly they were full of dead men's bones. Here is a president who for 10 solid years was carrying on with a woman who I understand has written it in gory, gross detail in one of America's favorite pornographic magazines, incidentally, to be published, or maybe it's already out, I don't know, at about the time that the man takes office. And the American people just don't care. They don't really care, and many of them probably admire the man for it. Here's a sports figure who now has AIDS, who has admitted having gone to bed with as many as 1,000 women, sometimes 5 and 6 at a time, which is impossible, but I'm talking about not a ménage à trois, but a ménage à sept, or whatever. And the guy is a hero and makes more money in 1 year than this church takes in 5. Now that's our values out here, out there, over there, down there, up there. That's our values out here. It's the nation we live in. And I can step on a lot of toes for even saying what I just said and get accused of racism. I don't care if the guy's purple, splotched, or polka-dotted. If we'd turn what color our sins are, we'd all be so dark you couldn't see us without a harsh spotlight. I don't care about people's color. What they do is what is important. These prophecies are absolutely right on. They've not been closed, nor bound up, nor mollified with ointment. Your country is desolate. Your cities are burned with fire, and they're going to be. Your land, strangers, devoured in your presence, and it's desolate, is overthrown by strangers. And the daughter of Zion is left as a cottage and a vineyard, as a lodge and a garden of cucumbers, as a besieged city. Except the Eternal of Hosts had left unto us a very small remnant, we would have been just like Sodom and like unto Gomorrah. Is that a little bit of inference about the manner of our destruction? Because God's destruction of Sodom and Gomorrah was just like a nuclear explosion from heaven itself. Hear the word of the eternal governor of Arkansas, President-elect Bill Clinton. Outgoing President George Bush, incoming cabinet members, outgoing cabinet members, the Joint Chiefs of Staff, the Congress of the United States, the House of Representatives, and all the other people who are in there now, including Dianne Feinstein, who wants to be president. Listen, all of you, you rulers of Sodom, what's San Francisco stand for? Wrists that blow in a light breeze is what it stands for. A pack of hounds that are called queers that have mince-ins on the steps. They ought to all go join the army, and maybe they can talk their commanders into waging war in the nude, which I've advocated for decades anyway, because I thought that in a military where there weren't any queers, they wouldn't be so prone to kill each other. If the guy's not standing there in a uniform, just a naked man out there, I don't want to shoot him. He's blue with cold just like I am. Let's just go find a barrel to wear or somebody's backyard clothesline to get some clothes. I've advocated in the military for years that we ought to fight wars in the nude, because I didn't think people would kill each other if standing there naked. But now I wouldn't dare advocate that. Because people going to the military today would say, oh, yes! That's what we want to do. Hear the word of the eternal, you rulers of Sodom. Give ear unto the law of our God, you people of Gomorrah. And then he talks about all of our religiosity and sacrifices, oblations, new moons and appointed feasts. And when you spread, verse 15, your hands forth. They always like to do that, you know. Evangelists say, you know, put your hands up in the air. Let me see your hands up in the air. God is not worshipped with human hands. When you spread forth your hands, I will hide mine eyes from you. Yea, when you make many prayers, I will not hear. Your hands are full of blood. And that is by extrapolation or extension. That's by the ultimate responsibility of individuals. People thought that LBJ was some kind of a hero and he was a wonderful man. I didn't. I thought that LBJ was one of the most cynical, brutal bunglers that ever got into the White House. And I thought that his arrogance in trying to send men up to Thud Ridge with everybody from the men, women, and kids lying on their back with a 45 ACP in the backyards of Hanoi shooting at them because he knew exactly where they were coming in and which schoolhouse they had to avoid and which factory they couldn't bomb and which neutral shipping offloading trucks and tires in the harbor they couldn't bomb and just little select what's your target for the day. Well, 14 more pilots have got to die today because LBJ said, well, that one looks good. Civilians in the White House running a war, sending men to be butchered. We just had the 10-year ceremony of the dedication of the Vietnam Wall, and a very great deal was made over that. You see the people there crying with a piece of paper and a Crayola and trying to take home a kind of an impression of a loved one's name. Here are all the names being read, and President George and Bush and Barbara were there and read the names for a while as they went through and reading every single name of every young man, father, uncle, cousin, brother, that lost his life in that butchery, that nonsensical stupidity of American presidents who first started out in the Eisenhower administration supporting Ho Chi Minh. And if we'd have continued to support Ho Chi Minh, he would have been China's problem. He had no intention of going communist. He was an ultra-nationalist, and instead we supported Nguyen Cao Ky, who was one of the most corrupt individuals in the world outside of Castro, and tried to hang some righteous label on the Vietnam War. But even so, the young man who was two when I joined the Navy was not only in this country growing long hair, and when he went to England acknowledged that when he was over there in Oxford, he quit breathing for I don't know how many hours it was when they were in there. He didn't take a single breath. They were in there smoking pot, but not him. He didn't inhale. I don't know how long. He must have been purple when they carried him out of there. Look, he hadn't inhaled for about 14 minutes. Better go get a resuscitation squad because Bill isn't inhaling. Boy. So we have a former pot-smoking, hippie, anti-Vietnam War demonstrator in the White House. It was bound to happen. I knew I should have kept my mouth shut in 1965. It was just bound to happen, I guess. But my question to him would be, dear Mr. President-elect, when you decide to send American troops, gays and lesbians all, into the next war, and a bunch of them decide to demonstrate against you, and they go to England or other foreign countries with banners and begin to demonstrate against your policy, what's your attitude going to be toward them? Now, since he basically takes both sides of every issue anyway, he's probably going to say, well, they have every right to do that. And I would respect their disagreement with the country. I'm pretty sure I can hear him saying that just now. I'm sorry, but I think that I'm beginning to live in a country that is so far down the tubes, I don't know if God is going to rescue us and give us any 8, 10, 12 years of respite to complete his work in some kind of a rosy economy. What's your view? What's your feeling? How do you feel about it? Do you think God is going to give us another president after this one to come back and undo the wrong that he's beginning to do? Has he made a single pronouncement? Has he made a single decision? Is he announcing a single policy with which you agree? I know there are people out there who probably voted for it, listening to my voice on the tape program, maybe in this room, I don't know. I'm not a Republican. I'm just a human being, planet Earth, born in Oregon, that probably has my share of patriotism and gratitude for living in the United States of America, but I see exactly what is the handwriting on the wall, what's going to happen to my beloved country, and why. And it's the why that I deal with. The incredible sins, the incredible immorality, the gross, absolute Sodom, Gomorrah, lack of morals of any kind, of the offerings of our little children, of Satanism, of Santeria, of kidnapping, of pedophilia, of people even in the priesthood, in the Catholic religion, who are molesting little boys, of the Anglican Church in the United States ordaining women so that people can go in and have a woman to confess to their latest little tryst or whatever it is they confess. Unbelievable. It just is unbelievable. And to me, it's almost like we're all right until George Bush exits the other day when the voters, 4 out of 10 of them, said they wanted Governor Clinton. And from that time, it's almost like somebody has tipped over a slop bucket and the United States is swimming downstream in it. It's like it's just happening so rapidly. Just the way I feel about it. Now, we will see as the months and the years go by whether or not that is true. I want to turn to the book of Jeremiah, the 8th chapter, for just a moment. We'll conclude with that. Jeremiah, the 8th chapter, because I could go on and on picking these scriptures out of the Bible for the next 5 hours and wouldn't even begin to explain the way I feel about it. In verse 5 of the 8th chapter, why then is this people of Jerusalem slidden back by a perpetual backsliding? Why is it seems we only go one direction, the wrong way, backwards? Why is that? Can't there even be one little ray of good news in all this stuff that's going on in government? I haven't seen anything yet. Now, I don't know. Maybe there is something that I've missed. We're going to invest, he said yesterday. You know what that means? Borrow money from future generations and from the Japanese showing up at the discount window in the Fed to pick up our debt and to put it into the states and the counties' infrastructure to allow all the graft and corruption and greed to fund government programs, go into socialized medicine, hand out money to all kinds of special interest groups, minorities, the poor, whatever it might be. Just government money just pouring out in a never-ending stream. You know what it's worth? Nothing. It's only worth the confidence of the people who spend it in the federal government and the confidence of the rest of the world because our dollar is not pinned to anything solid. The gold in Fort Knox is long since gone. There's just a huge hole in the ground there with a bunch of big IOUs lying around on the floor for all practical purposes. Your dollar is not pinned to gold nor to silver. It is worth only what the Germans and Japanese say it is worth. And there's still some of us in God's church who think money's going to save us. Who think if we get enough of it, we're okay. We had a couple million, we'd be okay. We wouldn't worry about tribulation. Where are you going to spend it? You can't grow enough carrots and have enough sand wet down in your basement deep enough to keep you through the Great Tribulation. And they'd be a whole lot better than dollar bills rolled up in coffee cans. Or $100 bills if you can afford them. Why is it that slidden back by a perpetual backsliding, they hold fast deceit, they refuse to return? I hearkened and heard, but they spake not aright. No man repented him of his wickedness, saying, what have I done? Isn't that a characterization of our land? Everyone turned to his course, just kept up his own hidden little agenda. As the horse rushes into battle, blindly, you know, with the blinders, neighing, whinnying, charging across the landscape, yea, the stork in the heaven knows their appointed times, and the turtle and the crane and the swallow observe the time of their coming, migratory patterns or their gestation period or whatever. But my people know not the judgment of the eternal. How do you say we are wise and the law of the eternal is with us? Lo, certainly in vain he made it. The pen of the scribe is in vain. The wise men are ashamed. They are dismayed and taken. Lo, they have rejected the word of the eternal, and what wisdom is in them? Therefore will I give their wives unto others, and their fields unto them that shall inherit them. For every one from the least to the greatest is given to covetousness. Now I know the insider trading scandals and the bank problems of today and the SNL scandal. We've forgotten all of that. We're just so accustomed to the white-collar worker and the blue-collar worker being a dirty, rotten, fork-tongued, double-faced cheat that it's something that we live with all the time. If you're going to build a home and deal with subcontractors, you better chain the lumber pile down. You better keep track of all of your tools. No one's word is worth anything anymore in this country. Do you know that there is probably one honest man out of every 25 or 30,000? There may here and there be people who will literally stand according to principle. But I know people who have sat before me in the Church of God International who, as a result of a fallout in a family or a problem with a family involving someone they love, they march not just out of, you know, of a relationship with that individual, but right out of the church. What is their excuse? How do you look up to God and say, well, he hurt my son's feelings, or he hurt my daughter's feelings, or, well, he doesn't like her anymore, so I'm not attending anymore. Isn't it wonderful? We human beings have such rational reasons. I'm sure they're really going to appeal to God the Father when he hears them all. Of course, he's already heard them, already has his answer ready. The angels already wrote it down. They've got the consignment. They've got the fate. They got exactly what the judgment is going to be, but you don't know it yet because you haven't presented your case yet. That is, face to face. You presented it, he's heard it, he's disgusted with it, he's rejected it, he doesn't like it, and he's going to take care of it when the time comes, but you really think that you'll be able to probably dissuade him when you get there. That seems to be the way some people feel. I will give their wives to others, their field to them that shall inherit them, for everyone from the least unto the greatest is given a covetousness, from the prophet even unto the priest, everyone deals falsely. That doesn't mean the House of Representatives or the Congress, does it? That doesn't mean bankers and S&L people. That doesn't mean insider traders and people in Merrill Lynch and all the other great big companies that deal with the money. For they have healed the hurt of the daughter of my people slightly, saying, peace, peace, when there is no peace. Were they ashamed when they had committed abomination? Nay, they were not at all ashamed, neither could they blush. People don't blush today. Now, normal news hours, I must warn you, ladies and gentlemen, they will say, these pictures from Sarajevo might be very offensive to some people. As soon as the news is over, HBO comes on with serial killings, including cannibalism and dismemberment. They don't give you any such warning when that's on, but in the news hours, if you're going to see somebody in real living color who really had his leg blown off his body, look out. This may be offensive to you. It's not offensive to the people going back and forth to Blockbuster, getting all that filth, blood-dripping garbage, and taking it home and sticking it in the VCR and sitting there ogling it while they down about 16 beers in a great big, quart-sized can or whatever of popcorn. Got to satiate the senses, you know. You can't only have your eye looking at it. You got to have your mouth going the whole time. Glug, glug, eat, eat the whole time. You got to have it all. It's a miracle there isn't somebody massaging your back, two Nubian slaves fanning your brow, and somebody rubbing your feet when you do that so you can really enjoy all of the senses. Could they blush? No, they cannot. Neither could they blush. Therefore shall they fall among them at fall, in the time of their visitation they shall be cast down, says the Eternal. I will surely consume them, says the Eternal. There shall be no grapes on the vine, nor figs on the fig tree, and the leaf shall fade, and the things that I have given them shall pass away from them. Why do we sit still? Assemble yourselves, and let us enter into the defense cities, and let us be silent there, for the Eternal our God has put us to silence, and given us water of gall to drink, because we have sinned against the Eternal. We looked for peace, but no good came, and for a time of health, and behold, trouble. I will conclude with that in the minds and the hearts of 4 out of 10 American voters who put Governor of Arkansas, Bill Clinton, in the White House. We looked for peace, but no good came, and for a time of health, health care, welfare, investment, spending, money, and behold, trouble.